Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. I am very excited. My favorite person that is commentating what is going on this crazy planet every week, Monday and Friday, and has a gift to not only tell you what's happening, but tell you in a way that kind of exaggerates both the absurd and the horror of what we're seeing before us. He is a writer, a playwright, a painter, a entrepreneur, and my friend. Thank you for joining me, James Howard Kunstler.
The pleasure to be with you, Mel Kay.
Thank you, sir.
What it is.
Well, you know, sir, I've been watching you for a long time. You've had your Monday and Friday takes on what's going on in the world evolve. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your 40,000 foot view of where we are.
Yeah, well, it seems to me that what I try to politely refer to as the grand fuckery is getting deeper, deeper, and deeper, and more in your face and more blatant every moment. It does kind of provoke you to think that somebody is losing traction, you know, namely the people behind all the fuckery.
Yeah.
At this point, somebody sent me an email today saying, is there such a thing as a deep state? And I was thinking, well, you know, there's a huge administrative state, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And its main duty these days seems to be covering up its crimes of recent years. That's all that it does now.
Right.
Okay. And that's not a very good kind of an administrative state. They seem to be running out of tricks. And you wonder, I frankly wonder that if this is going to end in some kind of a real insurrection, not a fake insurrection.
Right.
And I'm not promoting it, and I'm not trying to organize it myself, but I could see why a lot of patriotic, intelligent people would be asking themselves at this point, is enough enough?
Right.
And, you know, I wouldn't know how to organize that kind of opposition, but I think that it's getting to the point where these people won't understand anything else.
Yeah. And
you know, it's really going to be there. They're going to have to be dragged out of their offices and strung up on
lampposts. And you have to wonder, you brought up the fake insurrection. You have to wonder because, you know, the thing about these people that I call, you know, is there a deep state? Well, there's certainly people that are not working for we the people that are gallivanting down there in D.C. and have a lot of plans that have nothing to do with making America safe, making America competitive, making America even function. It doesn't even seem to be part of their job description at
this
point.
It is so far away from anything that they're doing that they're not even plausibly professionals.
No.
at what they're assigned to do. It's like they have no idea what they're supposed to be doing.
Right. And I saw like somebody that I do think is kind of, you know, it's a uniparty, obviously, but somebody that I think Rep Lee is one of them that's down there from Utah. And today he's like, this incompetence at the border. And I'm thinking, you can't possibly think it's incompetence anymore.
Mike Lee. Senator Mike Lee.
Oh, yeah. How can it be incompetence? And how can anyone in D.C. say that, you know?
Yeah, it's just kind of insulting to be told that. And
yeah,
I hope somebody tells him that over the next 24 hours.
Oh, I did. I'm sure he doesn't care, but I did. Well, tell him. But I'll tell you what is also very interesting is that so we have this World War III march that you've been talking about for quite some time as well. And, you know, it does seem that a lot of this has to do with distraction from every which way. But now we have a situation, you and I both in New Yorkers and all of that, where we have people marching in the streets talking about killing Jews on a massive scale and all of this on a giant scale that I think and people are now I have friends, especially Jewish friends, that say to me, like, where is this coming from? I mean, I marched with Black Lives Matter. Look at that. They hate us. And I'm like, well, did you ever look into any of that? You've been watching this and chronicling this this degradation of academia for now decades. What is your thoughts when you're seeing, you know, what, 30,000 people marching in Brooklyn to destroy all the Jews?
My first thought is, if they're going to go after anybody, I wish they'd go after the lawfare guys.
Me too.
You know, right. Mark Weiss, Michael Bromwich, who was Blasey Ford's attorney,
yeah.
Michael Mark Sussman. Elias.
Yeah.
Mark Elias. You know, it would be fine if they went after them. Those are the right people to go after. Right. But, you know, as a general matter, you know, reenacting the 1930s here in America, right. Not a very good idea. You got to wonder, it does kind of seem like there's a tremendous network, some kind of organizational right. network that's behind that, you know, behind all these demonstrations. And I've been wondering for years, how do the college presidents and the deans survive in their jobs? Do they not have boards of directors anymore at the Ivy League?
I don't know.
Surely they must. None of these people dissatisfied with this kind of behavior?
No.
You know, the net effect is this, though. It's not as though there aren't any consequences. It just seems like there's no consequence. But the main consequence is they're destroying higher ed. And it probably is a system that needs to be destroyed right now.
Right.
Just as the medical system, as it's currently arranged, needs to be destroyed so that it can be it can self-reorganize at a different scale, on different grounds, with different incentives and with a whole different organizational structure. So, you know, my sense of things is that the colleges that survive, and I don't think there will be many of them,
right.
will be catering to the kind of same kind of customers that they did in the 1820s.
Yes.
You know, they'll be finishing schools for young gentlemen and ladies, and that'll be it. And all of this dross of idiotic fields of study and idiotic administrative personnel whose only role in life is to make people uncomfortable, unhappy, and disrupt their lives, all that's going to fall away, yeah. like the autumn. And there'll be the skeletons of these institutions left. The kind of pathetic thing is that they went on such a, you know, there's a thing in evolutionary biology that I believe, which is that as organisms reach their climactic stage, they assume their greatest scale, you know, like those giant mammals of the Asian steppe, you know, the Baluchitherium, you know, these rhinoceroses that were four stories tall.
Right.
And that's sort of like what our institutions have become.
Yeah.
And it's happening just before they go extinct. Just imagine all of the money that went into building all these additional buildings they put up in the last 10 years, expecting that their enrollments were going to, you know, remain, you know, going to continue climbing forever.
Right. And right.
in fact, they're dropping steeply, especially right. among young men, by the way. Young men don't want to go to college anymore because, all you know, the whole thing is just sort of a degradation program.
It's right. like a humiliation
struggle
ritual.
Session, a 4-year struggle session for young men.
Yeah. Well, no. You know, speaking of my university is a disgrace. And, you know, they called me all the time and asked for money before this. Now it's like, you know, you've got to be kidding me. But again, what you're talking about, too, is a lot of these universities, NYU included, but Harvard and all of them, they're multi-billion dollar endowments. And then they're also in this whole racket for student loans that then Joe Biden's going to pay off. It's like, they have what's their endowment for? It's so on a level. Now, you wrote a book that I actually got in grad school called The Long Emergency, that is still in print and still is sells to this day, and people still find it new but very relevant. Where you were talking about what I believe is now known as like the infrastructure deal or the Green New Deal or whatever's going on, way before anyone was even looking at the whole oil and gas and what was going on in this nation. So could you just, for my audience that doesn't know about that book, just talk about what inspired you to write that and what you saw then and what you see now? Because it's as if somehow somebody gave you a little foresight into where we are headed.
Well, I was a novelist through the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And I started to develop an interest in the fiasco of suburbia, just as, you know, you could see how the country was destroying itself on the ground, you know, creating a living arrangement that was didn't serve people very well. And so I wrote a book about it that was titled The Geography of Nowhere. And it became kind of a cult classic in the grad schools for the architects and the planners. And towards the end of that book, it became obvious to me that the whole pattern really depended on our ability to continue mass motoring, right? And around the same time, which was the mid-90s when I wrote that book, a cohort of senior geologists started retiring out of the oil industry and publishing their dark and secret thoughts in obscure journals, because that's where they publish their stuff, like, you know, the Colorado School of Mines Journal. You know, how many people subscribe to that? Not too many.
Right.
But, you know, this new thing also was happening in the 90s. The internet was coming along, and all of a sudden this information started to leak onto the internet and into the chat rooms. And we discovered that the dark thoughts that these guys had was, we got a real problem with petroleum and with fossil fuels. And it's not the problem that many people think today. You know, it's not the climate problem.
Right.
It was the problem that we can't run an industrial civilization in any other way. Nor, by the way, can we run an alt-energy economy in the way that it's being touted without an underlying platform of a fossil fuel economy to make all the hardware for the turbine blades and the wind towers and the solar arrays and all that stuff. So, you know, that was obviously not going to work. And now, you know, we're being smacked in the face with it really hard. Right. We've gone so far out in the limb, especially with the idea that we're going to replace the whole internal combustion engine fleet with a fleet of electric vehicles.
Right.
It's so not going to happen. It's so much in the forget about it folder and nobody gets it. You know, we're not going to do it. But there are all kinds of weird things are happening on the margins of the whole automobile system that we're not paying attention to. And, you know, one of them, somebody notified me last week that there's a very big new problem with the insurers who don't want to insure electric cars. And for weird reasons. One reason, it's not the battery per se, although that battery is a big deal. Okay.
Right. Yes.
Battery failure. It's because the electric cars, each manufacturer has its own proprietary spare parts. There's no such thing as, like, you know, universal car parts the way we have for gasoline cars. You know, you buy an air filter, you buy, you know, an oil filter or a screw or something like that. All of these, not only are these all proprietary parts, but they charge immense amounts of money for repair. So there was this news article about this one guy who got a ding in his electric car. I don't think it was a Tesla. It was some other brand.
Right.
And they wanted to charge him $40,000 to take the ding out or to replace the quarter panel, you know, whichever one it was.
Right.
And so, you know, forget it. The whole model for insurance falls apart at that point. So anyway, that none of that's going to happen. But we've gone so far out there with it that, you know, we're basically going back to the Middle Ages, really.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it seems like. And, you know, you said you're the first person that said to me, yeah, they can want all this this full Internet of Body, Internet of Things and their fourth industrial revolution. But they don't have any, they can't possibly pull it off because of the energy issue that they don't talk about. And then, you know, but then you hear the World Economic Forum. I have to laugh. They're so outlandish. It doesn't even seem real. It's like watching a movie, these lunatics. But they're very proud of themselves and arrogant. But they just proposed with John Kerry, And John Podesta. John Kerry is our climate czar, and John Podesta is running the $300 billion infrastructure deal somehow. And they got together with Bloomberg as well, and all these people with this next COP conference they're having in the World Economic Forum and UN that I watch because I see what they're doing over there. They're talking about a $3 trillion investment by 2030 for clean, getting rid of all fossil fuels, net zero, they call it. And they would like all this money transferred in a global tax, a global climate tax from all nations that are involved in the UN. And my question is, who are we paying that climate tax to and for what? So what is your take on this? Like, you know, they keep saying there's no global governance, there's no great reset, there's no plan. And then they say something like, well, we need a global climate tax. And then the next question is, to whom?
It's very simple, Mel. It's called blowing smoke up the world's ass, blowing green smoke up the world's ass.
Right. Right.
You know, I mean, it's absurd and it ain't going to happen. And they're going to be out of power in like, 14 months or 16 months. And either that or, you know, we're going to be in a civil war. It's going to be one or the other.
Yeah.
And so that's what they do. They're, you know, they're out there fantasizing psychotically. And I just hope that some of these people face consequences for the things they've done.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was reading, because I read weird stuff and I know you do too. I was reading Hannah Arendt on revolution. And in that book, mm-hmm. I was looking up something for my own book. In that book, she talks about the cog in the wheel, a whole thing about like that these dictator, like you were talking about earlier, dictator by bureaucracy, where, mm-hmm. you know, it's all this group. And she was saying, until we start holding people accountable, that person specifically, because what we're seeing, at least in DC, is they're having all these committee hearings, like all the way back mm-hmm. to like, you know, no, everyone will remember the Benghazi hearing, but we have these all the time and they're going after agencies or they're going after the FBI or they're going after. Well, then Arendt was saying in that, well, if everybody's guilty, nobody's guilty. And I think what we're talking about now is people do want to see people specifically held accountable. And I don't want them all to die off before they have to pay for it. But, you know, what do you make of that? Like the accountability? Why aren't we holding specific people accountable? Like all these 51 people that signed off that Hunter Biden's laptop was fake are out there. Now they get promotions. In our government, they promote people that lie to us.
Well, because you know, I've said this before, and it's true for the moment. You know, we're living through a Jacobin type phase of our own history, where unfortunately, lunatics have grabbed the levers of power, and they're exercising it as hard as they can, and they're basically saying, you know, you can't stop us. Right. We're going to do what we want to do, whether you like it or not, and. You know, they'll reach a point where they are going to be stopped, and we haven't come to that yet. But all they're succeeding in doing is pissing off so many people so badly that when the time comes, you know, it's really going to be like no mercy for these people.
Yeah, well, we gotta hope that. And again, I do want to jump to, you brought up before architecture, and I think that this is another important thing that I want your take on. You did write a book about it, but I'm noticing this more and more lately that our culture, art, you're an artist, you're a painter, you're an artist, you're a playwright. It's so bad now. It's so ugly. You know, I feel like part of it all was to like take away beauty and take away talent and take away imagination to such a point that like 1984 or even worse, Brave New World. Do you see a renaissance for that? We're talking about that we're at a place where like the masses are seeing this, but you know, I think that art and culture and architecture, it's all been so, I don't know, like degraded, that I think there's a big void because of that.
Yeah, well, it's in part a similar kind of institutional problem. The world of art, you know, a visual art, is really this degraded organism that has crawled out of the graduate schools for the last 40 years. And, you know, it's really a ridiculous game of each graduate student trying to construct his own or her own metaphysical scheme in order to justify some stupid piece of clutter, stunt and clutter art.
Yeah.
And, you know, that institution is going to fail. But really what's, I think what we're moving into is a society in which there are far fewer people who are going to be able to call themselves professional artists. It's not going to be just something, you know, you do because you want to be famous. It's right. going to be whether or not you can produce something that people care about. And it, a lot of it will have to do with artisanal craft type practices for, you know, for everyday life.
Right.
Because we're going to be returning to a much simpler and more primitive way of making things and doing things. And it's interesting to see how in the technological age we managed to leech all of the artistry out of everyday life. So that it's in America anyway, which is probably the avatar of technological culture,
right.
You know, artistry almost literally doesn't exist. You can still see it if you go to a place like Paris. You know, you can see it in the handwriting on the chalkboards in front of the restaurants.
Right.
You know, they still take care to do it properly.
Right.
You know, they care about it.
Yeah.
We don't care about any of that. And but we're going to find ourselves in a strange situation where there are far fewer people who call themselves artists, but what they do will really matter much more. You know, canned entertainment, the whole art industry, which includes you know, the music industry, the movie right. industry, whatever remains of the stage industry, visual arts, etc. You know, it's all falling apart. Publishing, book publishing.
Yeah.
It's all falling apart. The long playing record was the art form of my generation.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know?
Yeah.
And it's gone. It's been gone for 30 years. Well, it continued, limped along a little bit as the CD for a while. But with that, you didn't get the liner notes really. So, you know,
almost. Or them putting together the songs in order on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's gone. You know, book publishing is, you know, we're all having to navigate new ways of getting our writing in front of the public. I'm not convinced that the book, as we've known it for the last 75 years, is going to continue to be a thing.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, it's only been a thing like it is since the late 19th century.
Right.
You know, people like Stephen Crane, you know, invented the literary celebrity, you know, Charles Dickens, you know, there really weren't a lot of the novels that were published in the century previous to that in the 18th century, the 1700s. A lot of those authors were anonymous, or they picked, you know, the phony names because they didn't want people to know that they were writing these things. They were scandalous. But anyway, we probably have enough books on the shelves of the library to enlighten and amuse the public for the next 5,000 years without adding any new ones.
If the new socialist head of the Library Association doesn't burn them before.
Oh, yeah, right.
They had their banned books week, and it was like, well, the books you're banning are like Shakespeare and Fitzgerald, you know, and Huck Finn. You know, those are the books they don't want out there. But, I mean, that's true, and we kind of have to go back to that. And but now the other thing about that, too, is our children are being so dumbed down and homogenized and all of that. And the government now is at a place where they actually say that they own the children. You know, I mean, it's like people don't know history, don't know that this happened in Mao's China and other places. But when you're watching this, first of all, I think the Department of Education is totally unconstitutional with a bunch of other things. But it's amazing to me that more parents have not, and I'm talking the young kids, have not put a stop to this at this point. And I don't see how much further it can go, because what's happening is I saw Oregon no longer is requiring competence in math or in writing to graduate from high school. Right. You know, where does
the only things you really need to know, by the way.
I know, but you know, it's at this point who benefits from this? No one. It's got to be the controlled demolition of America with nobody to then fix it. Hey guys, thank you for watching the show. I just want to remind you yet again
that we really need to be very cautious of what is going on with the economy, both here and internationally. Most of us know that the BRICS nations are looking for a gold-backed currency to dethrone the dollar being the world reserve currency. They have an event coming up on August 22nd. The BRICS nations are all going. There are also 13 other nations that would like to join the BRICS nations. And this is not something to not pay attention to. We have to make sure that you protect your savings. And that is why I have chosen Beverly Hills Precious Metals. That is where I have gotten my gold and silver. I leave it in a depository. I know it's there. I've replaced it with my savings. I've put there to make sure that I weather the storm no matter what, be it the central bank digital currency, the BRICS nations, the dollar goes into collapse, whatever may happen. I know 401k, IRA, backed by gold, as well as having my savings, at least an amount of my savings in gold, in the depository or sent to you at home, is the best way to make sure you maintain peace of mind and make sure that your savings and everything that you've earned is safe no matter what comes. We will get through this. All is not lost. America will return to greatness as it always has been. But between now and then, we have to be very smart and very cognizant of what's going on. So please go to Mel K. Gold, or go to the MelKShow.com partners page and go to Beverly Hills Precious Metals, and my friend Andrew will take care of you. He's got a great team. Gold is the way to go right now, and I know that no matter what, I'm safe. So please do that for yourselves. We really care about you here. You're more like family and friends, and I hear from all of you a lot. So I just want to make sure that you guys are doing something proactive to be prepared. All will be well, but take care of yourself now. Being prepared is always a good thing.
The order of the day in our country is disorder.
Right.
And it's not just the day, actually. It's, you know, we're going through a period of time that will be characterized as extreme cultural disorder. And we may have a few lost generations before human beings get their footing again about, you know, what's important to know and what's important to practice.
Yeah.
And it's just unfortunate. It's tragic. But, you know, life in our country, in the Western world, where, you know, in Western civ, is going to self-reorganize,
right?
As it does when it goes through a trauma, and you know, it's going to seem a little bit like a couple of steps back. You know, I think that we are going to be kind of quasi medieval for a while. Is it going to be a timeout from techno-industrial civilization and from progress as we've known it?
Yep.
You know, we don't know how much information and technology we're going to retain or lose. My guess is we're going to lose quite a bit. We're going to forget a whole lot of things. You know, same way that the Britons forgot how to make pottery when the Romans cut and run and ran,
right?
In, you know, in 400 AD,
yeah,
or so. And we're gonna have to relearn how to live, and it's gonna be very tough. So disorder is the order of the day, and it probably means that a lot of the behavior that you see will appear to be psychotic.
Right.
And that's exactly what we're seeing.
Yeah,
that's exactly what we're seeing. But you know, I mean, how many of these TikTok videos of insane primary school teachers showing off their classrooms do you have to see before you realize we've basically hired a lot of insane people to teach kids? I do think, though, to speak to that, to what you brought up about why the parents aren't stepping in, you have to consider that the families, the people in this country, are leading absolutely frantic lives. You know, they're trying desperately to keep their heads above water financially,
right?
And they're losing ground every day. And I think they simply regard the K through 12 school system as the babysitter that they just have to put up with in order to go out and do their job, so they don't have to stay home with their kids.
Right.
And of course, you know, a lot of those people are women who would be otherwise being actively working as mothers,
right?
And you know, in a role that kind of no longer exists in America anymore. And,
well, maybe
and,
in this,
you know, it's,
yeah, go ahead.
Well, it's not polite to talk about that. You know, that maybe there should be seriously. We should seriously consider that there's a career called being mom, You know,
I think that what you're saying about the reorganizing of our of society, that that needs to be part of it. I have a lot of friends, and these are not people these that would ever in a million years have homeschooled, but they are now. And this only happened since COVID. And there is a way, but that's what you're talking about is they've made us such consumers and material, and it's constant debt slavery and this and that. And the idea of in my generation of staying home and being a mom was like, well, you can't do that unless you're married to a very wealthy man. And then that idiot hires a nanny. And you know, and at this point now, I think part of the going back and restructuring is taking that back, because a big part of this, I want to ask you about this, because you were in New York at the time. You're a little younger, but you're around the age of these people. I look at this and I really dug into what I look at as some of the people that really fomented this and I believe brought us Barack Obama, the Weather Underground. Who was Bill Ayers, Bernadine Dorn, these people, they were actual domestic terrorists, rich, basically a bunch of rich white kids in New York City blowing things up. You were around at the time. And they still, I believe that them with their Saul Alinsky and their Frank Marshall Davis and all of them, I believe that a lot of what's happened now fomented and started with them. And that we're still kind of fighting that same hatred of this country from the inside out. Do you see, because now you've watched it from then to now, their influence there in all of this, and that there's kind of a generation that came up to kind of emulate them or what?
Well, I think it's just a kind of a theme that runs through human history, that there's always a cohort of people who are a particular kind of pernicious idealists who want to mold the human race in a certain way. And, you know, in the last 150 years, it's taken the form of Marxism, you know, which has a very elaborate scaffold of ideas and ideology to justify its aims. And a lot of them conceal what's actually going on within those movements. You know, in our time with the wokesters, it's not really about ideology. It's about the enjoyment of punishing other people who you envy, and sadistically as possible. Right. So it's about sadism and punishment. It's not really about politics. And I was in college in 1966 to 1971.
Right.
And I lived through that whole revolutionary thing. I did have the weird experience. I ran for student government president as a gag, as a goof, and I won. And once I won, I was immersed. It's 1968.
Oh, wow.
So it was like the absolute heart of the Vietnam War era.
Wow.
And I was on campus, and I was really, I had a lot of encounters with the young radical left of the day. I was not a radical. I was just I was figuring out what I was at the time.
Right.
But I was very impressed with how despotic they were even back in 1968. And that has not changed at all. Is basically what they want to do is just push people around. And you know, I was saying in the college lectures I was giving before I got canceled, and I was doing a lot of college lectures on urban design. Crazy. Actually, right. I kind of segued into the long emergency from that. And I was telling audiences, you know, that we are unable to construct a coherent consensus about what we're going through, and we're going to beg somebody to push us around. And that's sort of where we are right now. And that's what COVID was. COVID was a demonstration of America begging despots to push them around. And, you know, now that's kind of looking over. And now there's hell to pay for it. And but, you know, will payment be made? We don't know yet.
Yeah. And our last thing that I want to talk about is kind of this push towards World War III. I don't care. I think, listen, people can pick their sides or think what they want. You know, by pointing out that 2014 and NATO and all of that, I was put on a list of my show. Of course, I'm heavily censored and canceled a lot, but I was put on a list of pro-Putin podcasts because I actually like just talked about actual history and Victoria Nuland too much, I guess. But so we're in this situation where I don't know if you saw it. Zelensky's very upset because we're not paying attention to him anymore. Time magazine, who's a total intel operation, a narrative propaganda magazine, and has always been, as far as I can see, is put out an article basically talking about the money laundering in Ukraine. You know, well, you should have known. Yeah.
They seem to be prepping the country for the failure of that operation.
Right. And you've been writing about that it was failed for a long time.
The very start, I never had any enthusiasm for it. In fact, you know, I would state, you know, out front that I think that Mr. Putin had every justification for stepping in and doing he did. And I also think that he's probably the only person who's going to turn that corner of the world into a region that's not a problem for everybody anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't a problem for us for the last 75 years until we turned it into a problem. Ukraine. Whoever thought about Ukraine between 1948 and 2014? Nobody.
The people pillaging it. Financial gain. But on that side of that, you know, the thing that is, and I said this today, and I wonder what you think of this. And this is kind of we can go from here. But, you know, America's gotten away with something that most nations haven't, because I'm watching all the rhetoric about Israel and they're not saying anything about the people. They're acting as if Israel is the people, and there's 6 million Jews, they say, in Israel. They're saying 2 million. Israel is also, I remind people on every show, the size of New Jersey. And Gaza is about the size of Atlantic City. And Gaza's gotten billions of dollars over the years that clearly is not going to Gaza. But the hatred and the rhetoric, and it's from all sides, and it's very shocking to me, the level of it. But, you know, from the river to the sea, this whole thing, and that means the killing of all the Jews, or they're saying ceasefire when it's like, well, did you see Hamas's doctrine? And this whole story that's going on there, this narrative. But the truth is that people just, this happened with Russia too, when we went into the Russia-Ukraine thing was, there was a masses of people that were calling the Russian people to be canceled. Right now they're calling for the Israelis to be killed. You know, the American people have done so much, in my opinion, at least from what I can see from Vietnam forward, if not all the way from the First World War. But the American people have never been held accountable. It was always our government or the military-industrial complex. And I have a feeling that, and from what I'm seeing too, for the first time in the history of America, I think people around the world are blaming the Americans, not the government. Yeah. And do you see that? Because I think that's a real problem. If people will remember when, with every one of these color revolution words, but certainly in Iraq, you know, they started to rev us up to like the Iraqi people were bad people. Right now, the Israeli people are bad people. The Russian people are bad people. I feel like for the first time in history, the world is looking at America and thinking that.
Yeah, and it's kind of dangerous for us. And you know, as far as the whole Israeli-Palestinian war that's going on right now, just realize that the dominant story in our culture now is the victim story.
Right.
And this is just another iteration of that. You know, they've actually been the left's pet oppressed group for about 20 years now, but this just kind of ratchets it up to you know, the metaphysical level. And I think that the Israelis are intent on neutralizing them as a force, and I think they're going to do it well, and I think they're going to do it properly. And they have to withstand all the objurgation of the world to do it. And they're going to do it. You know, Mr. Netanyahu is not very well liked anymore.
Right.
But I think he is a determined man and he wants to save his country, and that he knows that his career is over. This right. is the last thing that he's going to do, and he's going to try to do it properly.
Yeah.
And that's where we're at. Yeah. I don't think that I really doubt that the Iranians and the Turks are going to be sucked into this thing. Turkey, for one, is a very wobbly economy with a wobbly currency. You know, the Turkish lira, which has lost a tremendous amount of value the last several years. I think that if he entered this thing, that would destroy Turkey's economy.
Yeah.
Iran, I think, is a little bit sturdier, but, I don't think that they could withstand the punishment that they would take for stepping into this.
Yeah, and I'm not so sure who's behind the scenes that propped up the Iranian regime or any of these regimes anyway, as it is, because, mm-hmm. you know, we know that there's a lot of money involved here. We sent $6 yeah. billion dollars to Qatar just before this. We know that Xi was meeting with both Netanyahu and Abbas before this. I just think a lot of it's not what it seems, and yet we're fighting emotionally amongst ourselves and with religious fervor and not knowing history, and it's all over the world, and nobody's really paying attention to who benefits here, because that land, I did a show with Matt Arett where we went all the way back to like the beginning of time. That land right there where Israel is has been debated about and wanted for way before, you know, anyone even realizes that, and not just because it's Israel, but because of where it is geographically in the world. And, sure. you know, China has their Belt and Road Initiative, and you know, Turkey wants to build this and that. And it's like, I think the same thing a little bit. And I hate to be this person to say that. I think this also about Ukraine. I think whoever wins these wars is who rebuilds the destruction after the war. So I keep saying to people, well, you know, my one thing is people never really ask why have billions of dollars gone into the Palestinian territory that's the size of Atlantic City, and it's never been developed, and the money's coming from the IMF and it's coming from the World Bank. It's not about Israel. So there's so much more to this story, and yet everyone so emotionally thinks they have all the answers. And I'm just saying, maybe it's not what it seems at all.
Yeah, a couple of things about that. One is, you know, they've got this strip in the Gaza Strip of 25 miles of superb Mediterranean beachfront. You know, they could have turned it into the Mediterranean's premier resort if they right. had been thinking, if they hadn't been just filled with hatred and venom. But they didn't do that. The other thing that I wonder about is, what's up with Barack Obama? What is up with that guy? Why does nobody talk to him? Why is he never interviewed? Why is the only thing that we ever see of him, you know, when he pops up on some, you know, a World Forum meeting somewhere to shoot his mouth off for 15 minutes? But, you know, he's never interrogated by the newspapers or the cable news stations. I mean, he's not even on CNN or MSNBC. And I think there's something very nefarious going on with him.
So do I.
And I'm beginning to think that he's, you know, going to turn into some kind of like a epic world-class villain in history.
Well, I believe that the second, Jack Cashel, I think, told me, he wrote a book about him, that the first person that most visited Barack Obama while he was in the White House, I believe, was Al Sharpton. The second one was the head of the Muslim Brotherhood. And we really do have to understand that what you're saying right now is, I've been saying quite a bit myself, which is, you know, I do think that all these nefarious groups, I believe that there is a something above all of our governments right now. That's why I say I feel like America is a captured government.
Yeah, it's like one of those 1950s sci-fi movies where there's like a giant UFO
right.
just hovering over New York City, you know.
Yeah, but that's what it feels like. And I think a lot of enemies of, because I keep saying, you know, how Trump was always saying they're not after me, they're after you and I'm in the way. I keep saying, I don't think they're after America. I think they're after the world, and America's in the way. And when you look at the Belt and Road Initiative and all of that, and I kind of think that all these people, I mean, this might be wrong. I'm just saying from what I see on their own websites, because they don't hide it, with their Agenda 2030 is kind of where I see the connection. And the crazy, and Obama signed on to that, by the way. But when you look at that and you look at all the different countries that have their 2030 agenda, and it all looks the same, and it's about global governance. China seems to think that they're going to be running it. But I'll tell you what, so does the Muslim Brotherhood. So does the Davos crew. So they better hope that America is not taken out, because the hell on earth that it will be when they fight over who's going to run the world will be way worse without America there. So I keep saying, like, America falling out is the worst case scenario for humanity.
Actually, they're all going to fall out. That's the dirty secret. It is, you know, the macro trend in the world coming up is going to be devolution, relocalization, decentralization. Yeah. You know, the most absurd thing is the idea that it's even possible to have a centralized global government at this point, because all the trends are going in the opposite direction. So it's absurd. It's just another absurdity that we're struggling with in our semi-psychotic state. So...
Well, I agree with you. And you've said that from the very beginning. And the truth of the matter is that they keep pushing it so hard that it's becoming more and more absurd. That's why I tell everyone I send your columns to everyone, because you have a, but you have like this weird, I don't want to make you embarrassed, but you have this, I don't know if it exists so much anymore. It was very famous in the 20s, this kind of Algonquin type witty way of putting out what's really going on in the world that's so horrible, but yet making it funny and absurd to the point that you read it and you don't feel so bad, but you at least feel informed about what's going on. And it's a true gift. Your writing is incredible. And I'm sure you never thought that you'd be chronicling the controlled demolition of the United States.
As a matter of fact, I got a book coming out in November.
Great.
Is this backwards on the screen? The title of this book is Crazy Land.
Oh, that could be.
And it's a collection of my political selection of my political blogs from 2017 to nearly the present.
That is awesome. Oh, I can't. Well, when it comes out, you come back on. But Crazy Land, I send your stuff to everyone. When I first reached out to you and started doing shows, I was like, this is best. But there's a certain kind of writing that I think it's a craft. And it's been lost, and you still really, I mean, you are the example of that craft. James Howard Kunstler, I think you are the best of the best. Can you tell my audience where to follow you? You have a Patreon, you do all kinds of stuff. You have a book coming out. That's so exciting. So
I got
two
books coming out. Wow. I got another. Yeah. I'm putting out two books this fall. One of them I've been working on for a long time. It's called Young Man Blues.
Oh, great. It's
on a nervous adolescence. And I put it out partly because I thought, you know, young men are having a really hard time growing up now. And, you know, somebody might appreciate it out there. So I wrote about my process of growing up. And they can find me at my website, www.kunstler.com, www.kunstler.com. I put out a blog called Clusterfuck Nation every Monday and every Friday, and not the days in between.
Right.
And it comes out at 10 o'clock in the morning, no later than 10 o'clock in the morning, Eastern time. Yeah. And it's always there, you know, whether I'm in open heart surgery or coming back from the tennis court.
Yeah. And I read it every week. And I tell you, it starts my week great and it ends my week great. No matter how much chaos there is, there's nothing like a good dose of a counselor. I'll tell you that much.
Thanks. Thank you
so much, sir. And keep up the great work. I'm very excited about both your books, which I'll be reading. And hopefully you'll come back when you're ready to launch them out there and we'll sell a bunch of them. But in the meantime, take care of yourself and God bless you. And thank you for your work and your words. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Mel Kay. Thanks for putting me on.
The narrative is falling apart, but as it does, there's so much of this fraudulent disinformation, misinformation, censorship coming from the globalists. And what we need to do is be focused on the facts, cut through everything, be discerning, and get it first and foremost out there to everyone. It is important that you know what is going on. Censorship is getting nuts. You guys know it. There's accounts all over the place that are fake, that are not me. I know you guys send me emails and I really appreciate it. And you report it and it's on Telegram and Instagram and Twitter and they're not me. So I'm super excited to announce We the People with Mel Kay. Be the first to join. It's a VIP community, just you and me behind a paywall, no trolls, no nothing. We get to know each other. I will give you the facts first. I break a lot of stories a long time before other people. We can talk about past, present, future, history, what we're doing now, solutions for going forward, what 2024 is going to look like.
I'm going to do breaking news, do a lot of deep dives. I'm going to bring that information to you guys first in a live Q&A every week. So please click the link below and join me over there. We are going to create a community that is censorship proof. It's cancel proof. It's truth. It's transparency. It's on the road to God, country, justice, everything that we want in one place. This is the most incredible, amazing time to be alive. As hard as it seems and as difficult as the battle has been for you guys and definitely for me, all I know is that we all are part of the solution. We are all involved and invested, and you guys have the passion that I have. So let's join together on live Q&As once a week with me, Mel Kay, we the people of the United States, taking back this nation. This is so exciting, guys. I've been dying to do this, and we finally got the technology right. So please join me. Click the link below. Can't wait to get started. Oh, I hope you're enjoying the show. I was just talking on my new Patriot Mobile service. I have to tell you, I'm so excited. They are incredible. They are America first. They align with my values. And you know what? It's unlimited minutes, unlimited text, Wi-Fi calling, unlimited data, high speed, everything that you could use, just like everyone else. We have our time, we have our vote, and we have our money. And the great thing about Patriot Mobile is your service will be exactly the same. Difference with Patriot Mobile is they are an America first company. And what they do is they reinvest their money into causes that matter to me and matter to you and matter to this nation. At Patriot Mobile, those causes are the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, the Constitution, and our children's future. So please go to themelkayshow.com. Patriot Mobile is a partner of ours. Please use the code MELK. What I can tell you too is that they are supporting me and they are supporting creators because they believe in the First Amendment. They believe that censorship is wrong and they are going to put their money where their mouth is. Do what you can for the creators out there that are doing what I'm doing. Please go to Patriot Mobile, MELK Show. All I can say is thank you so much, guys. Supporting my partners supports me, and Patriot Mobile is absolutely awesome. I checked them out. We're switching to Patriot Mobile, and we hope you do too. Thank you so much.